When I started the journey of trying to look for what was wrong with me, I did. I went for, you know, brain scans. I went for MRIs. I went for, you know, looking for tumors. But there was nothing there. You know, I think we look in the wrong places.
Hello and welcome to the Women and ADHD podcast. I'm your host, Katie Weber. I was diagnosed with ADHD at the age of 45, and it completely turned my world upside down. I've been looking back at so much of my life, school, jobs, my relationships, all of it with this new lens, and it has been nothing short of overwhelming. I quickly discovered I was not the only woman to have this experience, and now I interview other women who, like me, discovered in adulthood they have ADHD and are finally feeling like they understand who they are and how to best lean into their strengths, both professionally and personally. Well, hello there, and welcome back. I'm so glad you've decided to join me. Here we are at episode 187, in which I interview Sarah Collins. Sarah is an activist and entrepreneur. Having grown up in apartheid South Africa, Sarah has spent much of her life passionate about social justice and improving the welfare of others, especially regarding gender equality and environmental sustainability. In 2008, Sarah founded Wonderbag, a portable, non-electric slow cooker designed to retain heat and continue cooking food after being brought to a boil. This product has enormous versatility, especially for communities in crisis where electricity and fuel are either scarce or non-existent. Wonderbag has won dozens of environmental and leadership achievements over the years and was voted one of the world's top 50 genius companies by Time Magazine in 2018. Sarah and I talk about the ups and downs of being a neurodivergent entrepreneur, as well as how neurodiversity intersects with innovation and its potential to spark humanitarian change. We also talk about the very real hidden costs of being an ADHD entrepreneur, like masking and burnout and the constant pressure to appear as if you have it all together. I absolutely loved Sarah's alternative name for ADHD, and I'm pretty sure you will too, so make sure to stay tuned for that. Also, the Wonderbag company is offering an exclusive coupon for listeners of the Women and ADHD podcast. If you head to wonderbagworld.com, you can use the code WOMENADHD20 for 20% off your purchase. And of course, that link is in the show notes. Now, Sarah is a coaching client of mine, and we talk about the difference coaching has made in her life since her diagnosis. If you're ready to make that step in your own life, make sure to head over to womenandadhd.com/coaching. where you can book a free introductory consult with me to find out if my coaching is the right fit for you. Okay, this was a wonderful conversation. I can't wait for you to hear it. So without further ado, here is my interview with Sarah. All right. Well, before we begin, Sarah, let me just give you a heartfelt thank you for agreeing to be on this podcast. As we were just chatting before I hit record, I can't believe I've convinced you to be on this podcast. And I think you can't believe you've agreed to be on it, but here we go. For whatever reasons that we have been brought into each other's life, I am internally grateful. So let's get started then. I'd love to hear and have you share what was going on in your life when you first kind of realized that you might have ADHD, you might be neurodivergent. Like, what were some of those things that you first started thinking to yourself, I should look into this?
Well, it's a hard question that even though it maybe shouldn't be, but I mean, maybe many people say this, but you know, for me, from when I was young, everything was off. And I really struggled to understand things and things that people thought were simple or were straightforward. I never felt that way. And I also have to caveat this by saying that I was an alcoholic, or am an alcoholic. I've been 20 years sober. And I think that there was so much confusion in my life about what was anxiety, what was depression, what was alcoholism, what was bad behavior, what were character defects, you know, what were all of these things that kind of I was labeled with or had or felt or whatever. And then you throw sort of all these trauma analyses into it as well. I mean, so I couldn't figure out what was wrong with me. And I was just doing so many things and traveling, and but things just weren't gelling. And I was getting really confused as to what was going on. And then in typical fashion, you know, it worked for me to sort of move around from country to country and to try and find my tribe, try and find some way to settle. And then I think really what hit me was COVID, when there was this massive shift and everybody started talking about, you know, in the shutdowns, I became much busier and I became, you know, I was sort of sitting on Zoom calls all day and my business was very busy. But there was, I was lonely and I was wondering where my friends are. And I was starting to think about all of these things. And I suppose I'm embarrassed to admit this, but one of the things that has followed me around in my business, and one of the things I suppose has been one of my biggest shame things, is the turnover of staff that I've always had since I started my business. And I started making bad people decisions because I didn't want to let anyone down. And so I would keep people that I knew weren't wrong, or I would hire people that I knew were wrong because I didn't want to admit that I've made a mistake. So this shame started to really build up in me. And you know, I couldn't work out if it was the narrative of my youth where I'd always been told I was useless and I was this and I was that. And so I was really trying to figure out, because I thought I was a good person. And, you know, I work in sort of the justice space and the humanitarian space. And I never felt I'd done anything wrong. I felt like I was a good person and I cared deeply about people. And yet constantly I was upsetting people, letting people down. And I really could not figure that out. And then I started to wonder if I was going mad, you know, like if there was a, like, maybe I was schizophrenic or something, because there was this thing and that thing. And yet everything I did was with good intentions. And I think one of the pivotal things for me was my nephew, because I could start to see a lot of myself in him. So then I started to think, well, hang on a minute. This isn't that I'm some evil person with this sort of double personality and stuff like that, because I started seeing it in other people. And also, interestingly for me, in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I started to hear a lot of people talking about some of the things that I thought were fantastic as character defects. And so there was all these sort of nuggets coming at me. And then I had a particularly bad year in, I'm trying to now work out the years, 2021, 2022, my business was really getting exploding, but I was having a massive turnover of staff and people were really angry with me and I was getting a lot of criticism and I thought, you know what, I can't carry on like this. And, you know, I started trying to explain myself better, and I just started to see my behavior and how when people would come towards me at work, if I wasn't expecting it, I would start to lash out. And it was like, this is not right. And obviously, I've had a lot of therapy in my life. In fact, I've probably spent more money on therapy than anything else in my life. And nobody had ever said anything about ADHD or neurodivergence. So I went to see somebody who was, I read about in the neurodivergent space, which I didn't really understand at that stage. And so when I met them, they said, well, I think we should do a diagnosis. And of course, I was a blue-blooded ADHD, neurodivergent, da-da-da, da-da-da, you know? So that's what brought me to it was desperation, actually.
Well, and somebody finally being able to connect those dots for you. Which I feel like that, you know, I've spoken about that on my podcast too. If it wasn't for the fact that my therapist knew enough about ADHD. I how much longer would I have gone through my life feeling like you said, like, what is wrong with me? You so perfectly articulated, by the way, that feeling where, you know, our actions don't reflect our intentions, right? And so that feeling of like, why is everybody walking around in eggshells? Why am I having such a difficult time with interpersonal relationships? But also like, I am angry, right? And I am feeling a lot of rage. I think rage is one of those things that a lot of us connect to, right? That feeling of like, why am I going from zero to 100 so quickly? And how are we supposed to know that that has anything to do with ADHD? I mean, when, you know, when we're thinking ADHD is just a little boy who can't sit still.
And that's where I have this big issue. And, you know, another thing that was really plaguing me and had been for a long time was how I was able to show up in the world in sort of turning a switch on and being able to speak on stage, to run meetings brilliantly. And when I was on, I was on. But then the minute the curtains closed, I would collapse and I would feel this dread and this guilt and all the stuff I said wrong. And, you know, there was this complete low, which was so weird. So these highs and these really big lows. And I really started properly self-loathing, you know, and really not understanding it. And I think, you know, you talk about therapists. And I mean, as I say, I probably spend more money than God's got sheep on therapists through my life. And nobody had ever identified this until I went to a place that had a sign outside saying neurodivergent clinic. By that stage, I was suspecting I was autistic, but I didn't know what that meant. But I talk about this, I share about this feeling of behind closed doors. I was this absolutely terrible person, and yet I shone in the world. And I think that's been the greatest, greatest joy for me, has been bringing, once I obviously was diagnosed and started working with it and all of that, was to bring those two things together.
Yeah. When you say bring those two things together, you mean just understand that you can be both? Or what do you mean by that?
So I think that with an interest-based brain, I now understand this complete switch on where everything else disappears and when I shine. And I've been able to decipher between that masking, what is masking, and what is just feeling low and feeling tired and feeling overwhelmed. Because as we will know, anybody listening to this podcast who's ADHD, and I hate that term, by the way, but who's neurodivergent and menopausal, is how much we do during the day, you know, and like our morning starts at 4:30, and we can almost live a whole like week, 2 weeks, month in a day. But if you can't sort of break that up and it all becomes one big mishmash, then it really, that's what kept taking me out. And that's what was causing the burnout. And Katie, don't get me wrong, I haven't got it right yet at all. I don't think you ever get it right, in from my experience. So to answer your question, what is bringing those things together? It's understanding that there's this, there's that, and understanding the routines and the things you need to put in place in order to nurture all those aspects of you. And none of them are shame-based. They're all just you. But that's what I was meaning by bringing them together.
Gotcha. Yeah. I always say, don't trust anybody who says that they've mastered their ADHD. But, you know, it's funny because I think a lot of the time, I certainly experienced this in the past before I was diagnosed, like I would use those days where I had all rockets firing and plates spinning, and I loved that version of myself. So I would use that version of myself as evidence for why I should always be that version of myself. And so I think it was because I got off on people saying, how do you do all these things, right? Like it was such a huge part of my identity. And so it was really difficult to
say, well, I also am the person who can't get off the couch, you know, who wears the same clothes for 3 days in a row and doesn't shower. Like all of the fact that I was also that person and had so much shame around that, I felt like I didn't want that person to exist. And now I feel like they live in harmony a little bit more, where I, you know, rather than feeling like I always have to be on, recognizing that with one comes the other, that they need each other.
Yeah, I 100% hear you, Katie. And I think that, you know, for me, I always say nobody gets off a comfortable sofa. So why is anybody going to change unless it becomes unlivable? And, you know, my highs, which I thrived on, the lows were getting lower, the highs were getting higher. And the two are missing completely. And then there's all these people in between trying to figure out which one you are. And I think you only really seek help or seek clarification when it's too much. Also, one of the things I'm very passionate about is the stigma around it, because I think more people would want to understand themselves better if you didn't have to be labeled. So there's a difference between being labeled and stigmatized. If there was better language around understanding the way our brains work and the difference, how we process things differently. And I think it was that understanding that has also made me feel really passionate about trying to get people to understand that it's the processing of the brain. Why should we be judged and ostracized, you know, and why is there so much shame around it? And for me, that's a big thing. And now as I've got more comfortable, and when I say comfortable, comfortable with who I am and being able to balance those things more, not being comfortable in the world and getting it all right. That's not what I'm saying at all, because that's never going to happen. It's about, you know, sort of using the challenges and our resilience and everything else. But I think it's also made me realize that, you know, those of us that have got to this point, we have an opportunity to change the narrative and to share our stories. And, you know, one of the things that always happens is that people talk about how fantastic it is and how great the journey is, and you know, how I've become a coach in ADHD or in business, or, you know, a coach of this or that. I mean, I couldn't coach a couch. The point being is that it's an everyday thing for me. And if anybody thinks there's a silver bullet, or if anybody thinks there's a pill, or if there's anybody thinks there's the perfect anything, then you must go and really think about the diagnosis again, because there isn't that. Life is full of challenges. And I think our generation didn't get that memo. Well, I certainly didn't in South Africa, in apartheid South Africa, where everything was perfect. And we were living in this absolutely horrific injustice regime, which I started to feel as a young girl, that life was not fair and that life was tough. And, you know, I often think, why didn't we get that before we came out, you know, and got told actually what life was? And so I think it's that acceptance that we're not going to feel joy all the time, and we're not going to be that successful person all that time. And, you know, I think about, you know, the person who we just hide away from the world, you know, I have to close my bedroom door when I'm traveling because I don't want anyone to see what it looks like, you know. And it's that recuperating side of ourselves, or the realness of ourselves, that we don't want to show other people. But actually, that's what we do need to show, because that's life. And I think that in the world that we live in today, in such an uncertain world, in such a leaderless world, and in a world devoid of humanity and the humanness of people, I think showing the truth and the realness rather than the success that is the Googled success. Do you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, what goes hand in hand with that is the irony of the stigma against ADHD, which is you can't possibly have ADHD because you did well in school or you run businesses or, you know, all the reasons why so many of us weren't diagnosed, because oftentimes we say, well, you can't possibly have it because of all these wonderful things you've done. Now I realize that those are most like those are the people that I immediately think they must have ADHD, right? If you're an entrepreneur and you run a business, you probably have ADHD, but there is all of the stuff that comes with it. So yes, all of the substance abuse, all of the stuff that so many of us, eating disorders, so many of us deal with these things in the shadows, but it's so true. Like it's like they both have to exist. And so you need to look for that and assume that if somebody is running a business, if somebody is phenomenal, if somebody is that person that you think, wow, I don't know how you do all of that in one day, then that person is also probably compensating or deeply struggling or not. I mean, hopefully, ideally, you get to a place of self-acceptance and self-trust and all of that. I actually want to get back to what you had said about AA, because, you know, substance abuse is something that is, you know, we talk about a lot on the podcast. Many of us have, you know, troubled past, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, you mentioned that that one of the things that you struggled with AA is that this idea that there were character defects that you needed to get over or that you needed to rise above, and that those were things that you sort of looked at in yourself as being great characteristics about yourself. Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, I mean, I must just say that I think AA is one of the most extraordinary organizations, if not the most extraordinary organization in the world, because it is one alcoholic talking to another. And as you and I have learned in our relationship, is one ADHD person talking to another, we get each other. You know, we laugh at the same things. And in AA, it gives people the space. And AA is responsible for getting more people sober than anything else in the world. And I wouldn't be sitting here today if it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm still a member of it, and I still go. And people say, really? After 20 years, do you still crave a drink? And I'm like, no, it's not about that. It's about the community. And it's about the rituals, and it's about the routines, and it's about seeing like-minded people. But I think over the years, what I've come to be able to understand is what works for me and what doesn't. So a lot of it is talking about character defects. And, you know, a lot of the madness is what makes us who we are, you know, and madness, I do that in inverted commas, because I would like to be able to quote now out of AA, but of course I can't remember, so I can't quote. But there's a lot of contradictory things, and there's sort of this way about AA that is, you have to stay in the program to stay sober, and you have to accept these character defects, and you have to do this, and you have to do that. And I understand those rituals and routines are absolutely essential to set up a good foundation for sobriety and for mental health going forward. But I wasn't prepared to constantly be a defected character, because I wasn't defected. I was different and I was unique. And what's the word they now call me with gray hair? That you're eccentric. You know, now I can be eccentric and people stand up on the bus and give me their seat. And it was those very things that made me a success. And what I also said to myself quite a long time ago was, I would hire a sober alcoholic any day, or an alcoholic in recovery, over somebody else. But I didn't understand what I was saying at the time. What I was saying is I would hire a neurodivergent person, because I believe 99%, if not 100% of people in AA are neurodivergent. That means our alternative brain processing system works. And that's the world that I think is the future. And the world has been created by predominantly white male neurotypical people. That's what the framework, shall we put it, you know, the framework of marriage or the framework of society. Well, look, I tried marriage for 6 weeks. It didn't suit me. You know, these kind of things don't work for all of us. So the mavericks, you talk about the successes. So Steve Jobs, for example, I'll use him. You know, he was a maverick. People hated or loved him. He was clearly neurodivergent to the extreme, but he changed the world. And I think those are the people that can and do, but it's not easy. And I can tell you that as a business owner and, you know, as somebody who is seen as a success and who has brought something into the world that wasn't there before, and it's been a magical 16 years. No, it hasn't been magical. It's been bloody tough and difficult. And only if I was a neurodivergent would I actually have survived it. And so the Google side of it looks fantastic. But, you know, it takes these different ways of thinking. And that, I call it magic. I don't know what it is. But those rapid fire connections and that, we risk takers. I mean, totally risk takers, you know, because we don't see the consequences at the time. We may have them later, but that's what it is. Is it easy to live with a person like that? Good heavens, no.
Hey, friend, if there's one thing I've learned about ADHD over the last few years is that we can thrive with the right combination of accountability, planning, coaching, and peer support. Knowing all this, I set out to create the ultimate all-in-one coaching and accountability community for adults with ADHD or learning disabilities. I knew I couldn't do it alone, so I joined forces with one of my favorite ADHD coaches, Alex Gilbert of Capable Consulting, and together we launched the ADHD Lounge. The Lounge was created as a safe place for neurodivergent adults away from other social media, where we offer live group calls, co-working, and body doubling every weekday for accountability, focus, and skill development. We have weekly and monthly goal planning sessions to keep yourself on track. We also have one-on-one office hours with myself and Alex. And of course, friendship and lots of peer support. We have 3 different membership levels to meet you where you're at. So if you're looking for an affordable way to stay connected, productive, and accountable, while also having regular access to ADHD coaching and expertise, then make sure to come join me in the ADHDLounge.com. Again, that's the ADHDLounge.com. And as a listener of the Women in ADHD podcast, you can get 30% off your first month with the code PODCAST30. So head to the ADHDLounge.com and use the code PODCAST30 to get 30% off your first month.
I always say I jump first, think later. People will say you're brave. And I'm like, I'm not brave. It's like you said, I just never occurred to me to think about whether I should or shouldn't do this until it was too late. And, you know, sometimes it goes great. Sometimes it's a flop. And it's all of those things.
Interesting, Katie, you said it's a flop, but I don't think that. I actually think, and now that I look back, I look back and I was cringing at some things this morning when I was thinking about what do I regret and I could die at some of the things I did. But I think that what I've learned on this journey is that everything is information. So if you can take, does that sound like somebody you know? If you can take that flop you talk about, that pancake flop, and learn from it. And that's what I'm loving, is learning from those flops. And, you know, something so funny, but I developed this product called a Wonder Bag. And, I mean, 16 years ago, I had no idea that I was ADHD. All I know that is that my friends used to say to me, how many more inventions do we have to have? How many more earthworm farms do we have to try out? How many more this or how many more that? And when I took them the Wonder Bag, I said, this will be the last. And my interest-based brain kicked into this product. And I only connected last week that it is the biggest hack for cooking for people like us. It's amazing. But I've never connected those dots. So actually, so many of the things that I do and have been doing for the past years, like knitting, for example. I'm an obsessive knitter. Everyone says, what do you make? Oh, nothing. Well, but you're knitting all the time. I don't know, squares, this, that, they. Somebody, you know, I'm going to make them into a huge blanket and will probably cover the house one day. But then I've now learned that that actually brings the left and the right brain together and it calms your nervous system down. So it's funny how these things that you didn't know were sort of ADHD hacks. We're going to learn a new term for ADHD and we're going to get that out to all the universities so we can lose that terminology. But, you know, all these life hacks. And when you take that magic of our personality with that huge downside of the depression, the burnout, the hatred of yourself, the low self-esteem, all of that, and you're able to kind of balance it a bit more, then you can start to have fun with it. And that magic I talk about, I love that magic because I love what's the universe going to bring next. And I think that I was just struggling so much for so long that that magic never used to appear anymore. And so, yeah, and it's not there every day either, let me tell you, but it's certainly, I think the greatest gift I ever did myself was to go and ask somebody and have a look at my brain type. And yeah, it's been amazing.
Oh yeah. Tell me more about that. So you had a brain scan?
No, brain type, like the functioning of your brain.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I thought.
Oh, no, I did have a brain scan. I had all of those things because I thought there was something clinically wrong with me. And you know, one of the things, and this goes back over time. So I filled out many questionnaires in different places. And one of the things that they asked you is, do you have long-term friends? And I went to boarding school and have been very gifted and grateful that I've had lifelong friends and friends that have been with me for 35, 40 years now, longer. And I'm going away with them all for a week in 2 months' time. So we're all still together as friends. And I was always so proud I could tick that because I thought that'll keep me out of the mental institution, you know? And because that was the main questions was, if you have long-term friends, it means you're not a lunatic. Basically, that was the old-fashioned language. And you know, also when I was 18, I was diagnosed by our GP as depressed and this and that. And he said to my dad, your daughter needs help. And my dad said, absolute rubbish, nothing wrong with her. She drinks too much, but nothing wrong with her. And the doctor said to my dad, but if Sarah had cancer, would you help her? And he said, of course I would. And he could not accept in those days that mental health was an issue, you know, was a real thing. So that made our inner voices constantly suppressing. So when I started the journey of trying to look for what was wrong with me, I went for, you know, brain scans. I went for MRIs. I went for, you know, looking for tumors. But there was nothing there. Yeah, I think we look in the wrong places.
Yeah, it amazes me that having that question for so much of our life and neurodivergence, ADHD, just never came up. Like, it is tremendous to me how far we have come in such a short time in terms of having this language that you've talked about, right? Like that we can say like, oh, like, you know, now I think about all those knitters all the women who were knitting in the PTA meetings, they all had ADHD, right? Like, you know,
absolutely.
All of those ways in which we intuitively developed hacks for our nervous system and nobody had any clue.
But I do think a huge contributor to, you know, I think that mental health, ADHD, ADD, dyspraxia, dyslexia, all the things that I've got, you know, and, you know, they've been around forever. But first of all, you know, you stayed in your communities and you knitted or you did whatever, and things were so much smaller. But I think that social media, and I'm speaking purely for myself, I'm 54 years old, so I'm old, and I didn't grow up with technology. And for me, I think this has exacerbated bringing this out so much. So there's two ways to look at it. One is that a lot has happened in a short space of time and around the language and making it accessible to more people. However, I also do think that one of our biggest and my biggest challenge, and I'm getting much better at it, is learning to manage technology around me, not managing to use it better, but to switch it off.
Yeah, I think that, you know, just I see it so much with the younger generation, but sort of between me and my children, I guess it's younger millennials or older Gen Z, I can't remember now, but you know, really, really struggling with social media and mental health. And I think it's going to be a defining part of their generations, much like the defining part of Gen X or generation is kind of bringing mental health to the fore, right? and looking after, reparenting ourselves, because our parents, their generation was the like suck it up generation. And, you know, don't come home until the streetlights are on, or all the ways in which we were abandoned, you know, emotionally by our parents. And so, yeah, anyway, that's a whole other tangent. I want to actually get back to your childhood a little bit. Just the social justice element, because I think that's a big thing with ADHD and neurodivergence is really feeling intense empathy. And, you know, you grew up in a very, very difficult time. What's the euphemism? Of apartheid South Africa. And you actually ended up going into politics in your 20s, right?
Well, actually, I spent my first night in jail when I was 15. See, and these are all the things we don't know that are part of our great different way of our brain functioning. Is I acutely felt social injustice from the minute I can remember. I just did not understand why Black people and white people were different. I did not understand why boys were more important than girls. I could not fathom this thing out. And what was interesting is the rest of our household, I've got three siblings, they weren't fazed by it, or not from what I could observe, but I was vehemently like, this has to change. And yeah, I became political very young. And I think it was also my parents got divorced when we were young. And so as the oldest sister, I sort of set up and I suppose took a lot of the responsibilities of the female of the house. But then I started taking on the responsibilities of the world. You know, I had to save South Africa from apartheid. And so, yeah, I went to jail. I started challenging everything from the ANC were banned, their books were banned. I would hide the ANC books that I'd got in London in our private girls' school library so that no one could find them, because nobody thought they would be hidden there. Anyway, you know, all of these things, and this has defined my life. And, you know, one of the things that my brothers used to always say to me is, why are you so sensitive? You take everything so personally. And I did, and I do, and I feel things, and I have this deep empathy, particularly around children. And, you know, I never wanted another little girl to feel how I did and to be ostracized and to feel so alienated for whatever reasons. And so still today, I mean, that's what drives me. That's what drives my activism at this current time in Gaza. It drives my activism as a humanitarian across the world. And it's driven the deep determination to equalize the status quo. And that's why I started a business based on humanitarian principles, because I believe that every woman has the right to be able to provide food and for their daughters to go to, their children to go to school. And so as we do, we take on the biggest challenges in the world, which 16 years ago and still is today, is that half of humanity eat off open fires. And those are people living in rural areas most affected by climate change. And so, you know, my job and my business has taken me to the forefront of conflict zones, of all sorts of things. But what I've learned through my ADHD or alternative brain processing system is that I manage brilliantly in a crisis. I mean, Katie, how do you manage in a crisis?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like it's when we're all just absolutely it's the only time my brain is quiet is when you zone in, right? Yeah.
And isn't it so funny that I've been gifted enough or lucky enough or whatever to be able to use those skills in my workplace? And so, yeah, so I think definitely my childhood defined who I am today. And, you know, that deep sensitivity we have and the feeling of social injustice and inequality and those things that we feel so deeply can also be catalysts for social impact businesses, which I think the next generations are going to be at the forefront of. But then on the other hand, something that I've spoken to you about previously is the rapid fire connections that we make when we're connecting and magic's happening and we're kind of figuring out a strategy. It also happens the other way, though. So we feel that intensity of all this negativity, and it just completely can be overwhelming. And there are times when I break because I don't understand how things can be in the world that they are. Do you know what I'm saying? So a lot of what's happening in the world is an assault to our senses.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's natural for us to question convention at every turn, right? I think that that's something I've certainly seen over the course of my life, even from when I was a child, always questioning, but why? Why are we doing it? Why would we do this? It makes no sense, right? And so, yes, so then you would rise up against injustice on anyone. And I've often talked to, like, I remember talking about the too muchness of the world in terms of how it deeply, deeply affects us in terms of our ability to process and self-care. Like, it's, you know, there were times where people would never have any idea what I was talking about with the too muchness.
Oh,
right. And because one, like you said, because one thing becomes all the things very, very quickly. And I think
said. Yeah.
During the early days of my diagnosis, as I was deep into hyper-focus ADHD research mode, I kept searching for some kind of all-in-one, everything you ever needed to know about ADHD and women handbook that I could reference and keep at my fingertips, but I never really found anything that suited me. That's why I've taken everything I've learned about ADHD in women and adults who were socialized as girls, and I've gathered it into a concise, easy-to-access, self-guided, and self-paced course so you can feel like you've got everything you need at your fingertips. It's called Hey, It's ADHD, and it has everything you need to start loving your brain and living a more fulfilling, gratifying life. I built this course to be helpful wherever you are on your ADHD journey. I am so excited to finally be able to offer this course, and I truly hope this will help you develop a deeper understanding of your ADHD brain and how to embrace it as you build yourself a toolkit for your own life. So head over to womenandadhd.com and click on the Hey, It's ADHD course tab for more information and to get started. Because you've been so involved in Gaza and because you have been really standing up and you know, doing such amazing things with Wonder Bag and with carbon credits and all of the things that you've been working on now since your diagnosis, how do you take care of yourself? How do you regulate in that? Not saying it works every time because nobody's mastered it, but what have you learned to do?
Well, I think, you know, I spent my life feeling like I was being chased by a lion. And having worked and lived in the bush and actually be chased by a lion on horseback, that adrenaline that you get from that being chased is what I've had all the time. So these imaginary voices in my head or whatever they are constantly telling me I'm not good enough. You haven't done your emails. This has to happen and that has to happen and this has to, and then you get in such a spin. And so you are constantly on overdrive. And I was constantly feeling that I just was never on top of thing. My intray was always too overfull. Well, it was, I didn't even have an intray because everything was lying all over the place. And so I just constantly felt on my back foot all the time. And I think what I've learned is that the world's not going to end if I don't answer an email today. And strangely enough, as disorganized and as sort of all over the shows I come across, I have very, very rigid routines. So I have to give myself time in the morning where, you know, nobody can disturb me, and I do my ritual, you know, of my morning pages or whatever I do. Cold water swimming has been a huge thing for me. And I actually want to mention this because I've lived in chronic pain my entire life. And that took up, I think, half of the energy. So the lion was chasing me on the one side. The pain was biting me from the other side. You don't have much wiggle room for other stuff, you know, so you're constantly reeling. And those two things have gone quiet, and that's open space for me. And I really put my pain down to three things. One is sugar. Second is, and I do break the sugar, and within 3 days, I do know that my pain is sore. Cold water swimming. I haven't had a hot shower since 2020. I never, ever. I will have a warm bath because that's soothing and nurturing for me, and I need that. But when I shower, it's only cold, and I'm always looking for cold water to swim in. And the third big thing is finding somebody who is like you, like me. So another ADHD person that I have an hour with every week. And it is absolutely golden, and it's sealed in a tight box because I have a safe space that I can go to and share. And, you know, I suppose it's the AA of ADHD, if you want to put it that way. So, yeah, I've forgotten the question now, of course. But, you know, this thing of going on and on, people must think we're mad. And, you know, also another thing is interrupting. It drives me mad when people interrupt these days because I want to say, have you had a diagnosis?
Well, for me, the most difficult thing is when people ask me, like, do you have an episode where you talk about burnout? And I'm like, well, all of them, but like, you know, like I can never decide what to call these conversations because we jump around so much and everything is, you know, I feel like we're going on that wall with all the red string everywhere, right? Like everything is connected. And so we're jumping around so much that I'm sort of like, I don't know, we probably talk about all the things every episode. So good luck to you. But I did want to come back to that, you know, the line that we talk about often, which is when you first came to me, you said, I think I'm approaching burnout. And do you remember what I said to you?
You've gone into burnout long ago. The lion's even half and eaten you. But, you know, I haven't had burnout like that since.
It's true. And I think even with the recent chronic pain flare up too, that, I mean, it had been more than a year of that, right? I mean, of really just understanding how important regulation is, and you know that your life is never not going to be chaotic, but it's how you respond. Mm. It's how you treat yourself in those moments, right? Like, I don't have to get back to these people. What's the worst that's going to happen, mm-hmm. right?
And I also think you save a lot of time not being in burnout. Burnout takes a lot of time, you know, because, you know, even today, and I was had planned my day meticulously for this meeting, and, you know, and I had meeting, but anyway, it all got messed up with different time zones. I did half my makeup. I went out to a meeting, and I was with my accountant, and he was talking. I couldn't hear what he was saying, and I could feel my heart pounding, and I could feel I was having an anxiety attack. And the effort, the poor man had to drive me home in the end, but the effort to come down from that panic attack and the effort it takes to come out of burnout, you know, we're saving all that time to put into constructive routine of rest, play, knitting, staring out the window, you know, realizing we can't figure it all out now, so we'll wait till tomorrow. You know, I'm like a very relaxed, chilled person these days, sometimes.
Well, on that note, you gave me a little hint into how you might rename ADHD, and I think I'd love it. Can you tell me if you could come up with a better name for this superpower?
Alternative brain processing system.
I really love that.
And I think I'm going to say, they say, what are you? I mean, what do you have or whatever? I'm going to say, I have an alternative brain processing system. How cool is that?
It is. It's really great. There's no stigma attached. I love the fact that it's got a little bit of the, like, you know, Data from Star Trek, right? Like a little bit of that, like, I live among you humans, because I often feel that way, right? Where I'm like, what would a human do in this situation? So, right, it's like we have alternative brain processing systems.
You know, it was interesting because on Friday I was at a meeting with people that have been particularly difficult to work with, and I wasn't sure how to deal with the meeting. And they were late for the meeting and they were rude to start with. And I said, you know, I have to explain something to you. I don't really do rudeness anymore. And also, I don't like the way you speak to me. And I don't like the way you turn up 20 minutes late. And I don't think I want to do business with you. So I'm going to give you an offer and maybe we can go our own ways. And they looked at me and they said, that's so unprofessional. I said, really? What does unprofessional mean? And I don't understand that word. I only understand truth and honesty. You cannot believe how now we're best friends. They want to do another deal with me and we're all going out for lunch next week and everything. And I just took away the bullshit, you know? And, you know, so I think that's what we have to do, is have alternative processing systems. Because the processing systems that we are forced into don't work for us.
Yeah. And somebody needs to question convention, right? It's what's that famous quote about tradition is the oppressor's excuse? I think that person was definitely neurodivergent who said that. Do you remember who said that?
No, I don't. But one of the things I do know, Katie, is that the neurotypical world is going to have to change, because I look all around me now, the people making impact, the people moving the dial are not the people that are going to drive this transition. I mean, you call us the Gen X, I think. I call us Gen T, the generation of transition, because, you know, we having to transition across a whole thing and set new pathways, neuro pathways for generations to come. And I think that's our responsibility, actually.
Oh, my goodness. Well, this has been phenomenal, Sarah, as I knew it would be. Thank you so much for finally agreeing to sit down sit down with me.
No, and I said, I'm never going to do this. But I'm really excited, Katie, because I really am proudly joining the neurodivergent community. And I'm enjoying speaking about it publicly. I'm enjoying sharing it with partners who just are so horrified. And then suddenly it dawns on them, now they understand. And it's just, it's really fun to be able to share that side of it. And I think also to be able to forgive ourselves, you know, I think that's a huge part of this, of forgiving imperfection. Yeah, I'm really excited. I'm excited for this journey I'm on. And I know it's only just begun 18 months ago, whatever. And yeah, I can't thank you enough, Katie, for being so amazing and bridging so many worlds, you know, and making sense of the nonsense.
Oh, I like that. Before we go, I want to remember to just go back to Wonderbag, because I know Wonderbag is your brainchild. It's been 16 years. That's incredible. Where can people are now in North America? Can you purchase Wonderbags? You used to be able to. You can.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, so it's basically a portable slow cooker. So you bring your food to the boil, you put it inside the bag, and it continues to cook for 8 to 12 hours. Now, if you're me, I bring my rice to the boil and I go downstairs and then I go for a swim. And when I come back, there's a catastrophe in the kitchen or even my boiled eggs. Now, anything I put on the stove, I bring to the boil and I put it in the bag and I never have to worry about it again. And I've had a hugely dysfunctional relationship with food. And I mean, I'm not trying to punt the business, but I just know that a Wonder Bag will be an amazing game changer for people who have heard us, because then they're part of us and for anybody really. And you can go onto our website, which is Wonderbag World. And then I think, Katie, I have emailed a code to you to offer 20% off to your listeners and their friends. Of course, can't remember the code. Woman ADHD 20.
Right. Yes. Women ADHD 20. I'll put that code in the show notes. Thank you. That's very generous. It's such an incredible invention and service. And to be able to see it not only, you know, to extend beyond Africa into places like Gaza now, and you know, to see that connection of the social justice with invention, I think is just phenomenal. And you know, screams ADHD now that you actually know what ADHD is, right?
Isn't it funny? And, you know, when Time magazine listed me as one of the top 50 genius companies in the world in 2018, everyone was like, but you hopeless at business. You can't finish it. And now it's like that ADHD genius. That's what they were talking about. Not your sort of clink, clink, dollar, dollar, which is what everybody thinks success is about. Anyway. This has been amazing, Katie. Thank you for the opportunity and thank you for being my partner on this journey. It's amazing.
Well, thank you for your curiosity and your insight and your vulnerability and sharing your realness and all the things and, you know, giving a voice and spreading the word and doing all the amazing things you do. So thank you, Sarah.
Take.
There you have it. Thank you for listening, and I really hope you enjoyed this episode of the Women and ADHD podcast. If you'd like to find out more about me and my coaching programs, head over to womenandadhd.com. If you're a woman who was diagnosed with ADHD and you'd like to apply to be a guest on this podcast, visit womenandadhd.com/podcast guest, and you can find that link in the episode show notes. Also, you know we ADHDers crave feedback, and I would really appreciate hearing from you, the listener. Please take a moment to leave me a review on Apple Podcasts or Audible. And if that feels like too much, and I totally get it, please just take a few seconds right now to give me a 5-star rating. or share this episode on your own social media to help reach more women who maybe have yet to discover and lean into this gift of neurodivergency. And they may be struggling and they don't even know why. I'll see you next week when I interview another amazing woman who discovered she's not lazy or crazy or broken, but she has ADHD. And she's now on the path to understanding her neurodivergent mind and finally using this gift to her advantage. Take care till then.